The World Travel and Dining Guide with Chef Michael Glotz is now on the air. Chef Michael is a lifetime chef, CIA graduate, restaurateur, world traveler, and radio TV host. Sit back, relax, and listen to Chef Michael take you on a journey to great restaurants and travel destinations and some super culinary tips. And now, here is Chef Michael Glotz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I'm Chef Michael Glotz, and you're listening to my premier show on the World Travel and Dining Guide. We've had a very exciting show so far for you. Today, we've just spoken with a good friend, Chef Willow Bennett, from Picayo in San Juan, Puerto Rico. I've spent a good part of my adult life living on the main island of Puerto Rico, as well as a small island off its eastern coast called Vieques. And Chef Will and I met many, many years ago, probably longer than either one of us would care to remember, and have sort of followed each other through their careers. And I'm very excited for what he's done to the culinary scene in Puerto Rico. So if your travel plans bring you to Puerto Rico, make sure you look up Picayo, P-I-K-A-Y-O, .com. Make reservations, talk to Chef Willow, and tell him Chef Michael sent you from the World Travel and Dining Guide. Coming up next, after we chat a little bit, we'll have some chefs here from Vero Beach, Florida, at a local bakery called The Patisserie here in Vero Beach we'll chat with. But I wanted to take a few moments. We've talked about some cheese and some wine and how we'll be cooking together on the show and kind of sharing some tidbits and stories with you and so on. I want to get in the kitchen for a moment with you and talk about how you can work on building some of your culinary skills in your own kitchen. And these are things you can do slowly over time with yourself, with your family, and they'll really make you feel a lot more comfortable about entertaining. You know, as a chef, one of the great things that we have going for us, first of all, of course, is our years of experience. And what those years of experience have taught us mostly is methods and techniques. And so if you learn methods and techniques, and we'll throw some out today and we'll throw some out in future shows, work on building your repertoire of method and techniques, number one. And then number two, build yourself a great pantry, because that's the other thing a restaurant chef has. He has a great pantry. He has a selection of seasonings, oils, vinegars, fresh herbs, all sorts of things to work with at his disposal all the time based on his menu. Especially if they're perishables, and then there's some shelf-stable items that are just always in his pantry. I build my home kitchen the same way. I already have the methods and techniques from being a chef for 30 years, but I've also built a good pantry at home, a wonderful selection of dried herbs and spices. Outside on my porch, I've got garden pots with hearty herbs that are easy to grow, things like fresh rosemary and fresh thyme and oregano, which are wonderful fresh seasoning, great to throw in salads, great to throw in soups and stews, or when you're roasting things, or throw your rosemary sprigs in the grill when you're cooking. So many things you can do with fresh herbs. A couple pots of those growing. If you open up my refrigerator, I always have staples in my refrigerator, like really great pesto. You know, when basil's really fresh, you get your hands on some, a friend from a garden, or you've grown some yourself. Just make a wonderful pesto. Put it in the refrigerator. Lasts for months. You've always got a little teaspoon of pesto to work with when you want. Because I've lived so long in Puerto Rico, I always have sofrito. Sofrito is sort of the Puerto Rican pesto. It's fresh ricao and cilantro and parsley with cubanel peppers and ajos dulce, these little sweet peppers with a little bit of garlic and onions, and this is all pureed together with some oil. Always have that in my refrigerator. Great when you're making rice or a stew or a quick saute, to throw a little tablespoon of that in there for an explosion of Latin flavors. Compound butters, it's another thing. And I've got a lot of thyme and rosemary and oregano growing in my pots, and I'm sort of want to, you know, cut it back a little bit. Chop those up, soften a little sweet butter, buy some good quality butter, some good cultured butter. Right? Soften it up to room temperature, whip it up by hand a little bit with some fresh chopped herbs, right? You can take this now. You can just put it in a bowl or something in your refrigerator and put it away. You can kind of put it into some wax paper and kind of make a roll out of it. That's what I like to do. I like to roll it in some wax paper and then into some plastic wrap and put it in the refrigerator. Now, anytime when you want, it's called a compound butter. Anytime you want to add a little flavor to a sauce, just cut off a little bit of that compound butter and toss it into the saute pan just before you're finished. These are the kind of little tricks that we use as chefs. Things we add at the beginning of cooking, things that we add at the end of cooking, and they're all staples in our pantries all the time. When I make stocks and soups and sauces, I always try to make a little bit extra. Great things to throw in the freezer, right? If I've got some chicken bones, in the refrigerator. I'm not going to throw them away. I'm going to roast them and then simmer them maybe with some vegetables and some herbs, make a great reduced chicken stock. I don't have to take all that stock and make it into a pot of soup today. I like to take that stock. I may freeze some of it in smaller containers. I also love pouring things like fresh stock into ice cube trays, plastic ice cube trays. Let them freeze, unmold them into a Ziploc bag. You've got a little cube of chicken stock to use anytime you're making something. You've got a quick saute or a little simmer of something going. It's getting a little dry. Why add water? Water doesn't add flavor. It adds moisture, but not flavor. Add a little cube of frozen chicken stock. It'll melt up really quickly and bring the moisture back to the dish that you need. I do that with veal stock. I do it with pasta sauce. You make a little red sauce. Maybe you've made a great marinara sauce or something. You've got a little leftover, right? I don't necessarily serve it as a leftover the next day as the same sauce with the same pasta. That's boring, right? I don't do leftovers. I can do repurposed leftovers, but I don't want to eat the same thing 2 days in a row. I'll take that leftover marinara sauce. I'll freeze that in my ice cube trays. Unmold it when they're frozen. Put them in a Ziploc bag. Now maybe I'm doing a quick little steak saute, or I've got a great pork chop. I've browned it off nicely in the pan, right? It's really seared off nicely. It's done cooking. I'm going to take it out. I'm going to put it on my dinner plate. I'm going to toss in a cube of chicken stock and a cube of marinara. And I'm just going to let that reduce down, scrape up the bottom of the saute pan, get a little brown bits of pork up in the sauce, let that reduce down until it's a nice consistency, pour it over my pork chop. Right? You spent 5 minutes in the kitchen, really easy, because you have these things in your pantry. So that's what we're going to work on. We're going to work on building things in our pantry. It's really important. Have great olive oils. Don't buy the least expensive olive oil on sale. You can buy some of that inexpensive olive oil for quick sautéing, but you want to have some nice finishing oils. You want to buy some really good extra virgin olive oil. There's some wonderful wineries and some great here in the U.S. as well as some great Spanish, Italian, and Greek producers of olive oils. Get yourself a small, expensive bottle of olive oil that you're just going to finish off a little sprinkle sometimes on a little something on your potato, on your salad. Is so much better than using a salad dressing or just tablespoons of supermarket butter. Get yourself some really good olive oil. Buy some quality vinegars. I'm not talking about vinegars that come in a big plastic jug, you know, made by the big brands in the supermarkets. I'm talking about go to the gourmet section in the store. Find some vinegar made by a small winery, maybe in California, or some that's been aged in some Spanish sherry wine casks, right? These vinegars will be very complex and loaded with flavors. Therefore, they may seem expensive to you, but you're going to use a lot less of them because their flavors are so intense. Now you're doing a little quick saute. You've got dried herbs and spices in your cabinet. You've got fresh pestos and sofritos in the refrigerator. You've got little cubes of demi-glace and chicken stock and marinara sauce in the freezer. Now you've got some great olive oils and vinegars. Don't just buy black pepper. Buy several different types of pepper. There's many different varieties and grades of pepper that you can grind fresh, crush with the bottom of a saute pan. Look at the salt market. There's so many amazing salts out there. Each one lends different flavor and character. Some are the more basic sea salts that you just want to cook with. I never buy table salt anymore. I don't buy table salt in the big canisters. It's silly. It's machine produced. It's not as natural. Get yourself some good sea salt. It's not that expensive for your general all-purpose cooking. And then you can get some really wonderful gray sea salts or some wonderful stuff coming from France and Belgium, even from Puerto Rico, from Cabo Rojo and Puerto Rico on the West Coast are some really wonderful sea salts. And these are finishing salts. These are salts where after the food is on the plate, after your salad is plated, you've plated your steak and your potatoes, you just want to finish those potatoes with a little awesome high-end salt. Just a little sprinkle of some of these good salt flakes will really help. And these are things you can learn to do to cook like a pro, right? So we're going to work on future shows talking about methods and techniques of cooking. It's not a big mystery. It's just about getting some great basic skills. You're going to work on building your pantry. Every time you go shopping, you're going to buy a little something extra to put in your pantry. Go ahead. It's summertime now, no matter where you live. Plant a few herbs and some pots out on your back porch and your garden and a windowsill so you have some fresh herbs to work with. And suddenly, with more of these things at your fingertips, you're going to find your culinary repertoire growing and growing and growing. Well, up next, we're going to visit with two owners from the patisserie in Vero Beach, Florida, hear about a very exciting bread-centric weekend. You're listening to Chef Michael Glotz on the World Travel and Dining Guide. Welcome back to the World Travel and Dining Guide. I'm your host, Chef Michael Glotz, in the studio, sipping a little wine, eating a little blue cheese. And I've got a special guest with me today. I've got Chef Mark Edmonds with me. Hello, Chef. Welcome.
Hello.
Chef Mark is the owner and the head baker of The Patisserie in Vero Beach, Florida. He's also an active professional member in the Bread Bakers Guild of America. This is a big weekend in the Bread Bakers Guild of America, isn't it, Mark?
It sure is. We're having a guild-wide international open house. It's the fourth annual bakery open house. So bakeries around the world that participate open their doors in various ways to the public, and we invite people in. In our case, we're inviting people in to talk about bread and sample bread so they can touch and play with flour, and they can come. We'll give tours of the kitchen, answer any questions they may have, and ourselves up to the public.
That's exciting. Open the door. Maybe we do more business if we open the door once in a while.
Yes.
No, just kidding, of course.
Well, traditionally, we're bakers are, you know, kept in the back.
Well, that's it.
You know, we work at 3 a.m.
Sure. There's a mystery. I know living a life as a chef, there's always a mystery until you start getting yourself out there a little bit. People don't know what you look like. They don't know who you are. They don't know what you do, what kind of magical space you have.
Exactly.
And this is a great opportunity for people to visit you and sort of see behind the scenes of The Patisserie. But I actually went to their website, and folks, you'll find them. It's the Bread Bakers Guild of America. So their website is bbga.org. And if you go onto their website, over in the right-hand column, there's a place you can click to find a bakery near you that is participating in this open house this weekend. So even if you're not in the Vero Beach, Florida area, you might have a bakery in your community you can go and support. Because it's really all about the artisan bread movement, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, not all bakeries are able to participate in this. So they also have an app and a place on the website as well that you can find even just member bakeries, even if they're not happening to participate in the open house. So it's always better to find a great bakery, you know, if possible, around you. There's a handful in Florida, and there's a lot throughout the country and throughout the world. So
I'm assuming that people, chefs, well, it's mostly probably chefs, right?
It's a diverse guild, so there are a lot of bread-making chefs and bakers. There's also
assuming there's some lay people that really have a passionate about bread?
Exactly. There's some serious home bakers, they call them, in the guild.
Okay.
And there's also millers and wheat growers.
Oh,
all
great.
Those people are part of it.
I'll bet there's some awesome sort of networking going on, or blogging, or a little communicating, chatty
things. Oh, for sure.
There's
a lot of things on their website that members can do. And then they have a lot of events. They sponsor various events through the country. Coming up in July is the kneading conference in Maine, which we went to a couple of years ago, which was
I need a lot of things. I think I'm going to go to the kneading conference.
Yes.
Is it about kneading things?
It's all about kneading things.
Kneading, the other kneading.
Kind of kneading. Not needy, but kneading.
I'm very needy, so I thought.
I mean, okay. I'm sure many people are. But that's a great little, not so little, but a great thing up in the middle of Maine. And that brings really together millers and growers, and they have, hand milling of wheat, and
wow.
They make bread in these wood ovens. It's very exciting.
It's something I think that the average person takes for granted. We go to, probably most of you go to a supermarket and buy a loaf of bread. You're not going to after the show. You're going to search out an artisan bakery in your community. But until now, you've gone to a supermarket, you've bought a loaf of bread, probably wrapped in plastic, and you make your sandwich. You don't really need to think about the bread, where it comes from, or how it happens. Go to the next step. Find a great bakery near you. Every community has great artisan bakeries. Reach out. You'll find them. Go to the website, bbga.org, and they'll help you find a bakery near you. There's so much that goes into bread, because it starts with...
And so little.
Well, there's absolutely
the key.
Pardon the pun, right? I look sometimes at, I'm not picking on supermarkets, I look sometimes at supermarket bread labels, and it's astounding, the list, and I mean a huge list of ingredients, to which two-thirds of I can't pronounce.
Yeah.
Tell me what's in your baguette, Chef Mark.
Well, in our baguette, we have flour and water and salt and a little bit of yeast.
That's it?
And some malt syrup.
It sounds boring.
It's quite a bit of work that, you know, starts about 12 hours before we bake. We start making pre-ferments for baguettes. And for instance, it's a poulish method, which I use, poulish. And it's basically the equal parts of water and flour and a little tiny bit of yeast, and that goes overnight. and gets all bubbly and crazy. But during that time, it builds a lot of flavor. It builds some gluten, which is our friend.
Yes.
And that's what really gives artisan bread, you know, one of its kicks. The key bits to be artisan bread, which doesn't mean that much these days, but in the community, artisan bread needs to be made out of sort of those ingredients. It can't have dough extenders. It can't have preservatives. It can't have anything else. And it has to be baked on a hearth. It has to be hand shaped, at least for part of its journey. And those things sort of ensure that bread isn't made, months in advance and frozen or shipped from some other country in a cargo container or filled with crazy chemicals that can't possibly do anyone any good.
That's why this guild-wide open house at bakeries all across the country is so important this weekend, because it gives the layperson an opportunity to visit their local bakery that's members of the guild to really see. I know that you're going to put out samples of flours, and there'll be bread tastings going on, and people can visit the kitchen. It's really very exciting. You mentioned a four-letter word a minute ago that's a little bit more than four letters. It's called gluten. Why has that become such a four-letter word these days?
Well, you know, there's many things. You know, we could have probably a three-hour conversation on this.
But, on gluten.
You know, the short of it is most people don't even know what gluten is. I mean, gluten is not something that is traditionally added to bread. It's something that comes from the bread making process itself. It's a combination of basically of two proteins that are formed when flour and water and yeast sort of interact, and then these things come together. And gluten is really the structure, the stuff that bread is made out of. It's what we work at all day long, all morning, all night to make happen. So, gluten. Then in processed food is a whole other ball game.
Right.
Gluten has been taken out of that, like so many other things, and added to things that it doesn't belong to. And there's certainly theories that that's what has contributed to a genuine spike in celiac disease to almost 1% of society or 10% of society.
It bothers me when I'm in a supermarket and let's say I look at, I'm going to pick something here. I look at a box of raisins on the shelf. And there's a thing on it that says, now, gluten-free.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, when was there ever gluten in raisins anyways?
Yeah.
And it really makes you wonder how much, why gluten has gotten this name, because it's been forced into probably a lot of
different foods. Sure. I mean, and the few, relatively few people that have celiac disease, even with the big spike in that, those people, it's a serious disorder. And it's basically a serious allergy to the proteins that form gluten. So it's, like any other allergy, it's pretty bad. But then this idea of the sensitivity to gluten and the sort of faddish diet
it's
become.
To me, gluten is two things. It's in terms of being an allergy, it's a real allergy.
Sure.
It's a real illness, celiac disease. But it's also a food fad.
It's a definite fad.
That people get over. Do your homework. Really read and understand what gluten is all about, because it's not the horrible monster. And there wouldn't be artisan bread without gluten.
No, and people have been making bread for thousands and thousands
of years. Has it really been that long?
So it's not a new product.
Isn't it like the first food source ever? It's like bread. It's just incredible.
It's certainly a long-standing thing to eat that people haven't been dying from for all that long. So it's, they say that doctors used to encounter true celiac disease once in a lifetime. And now, because of whatever has happened, probably GMO'd things in combination with adding gluten to where it doesn't belong, maybe once a year you meet a real celiac person. So it's bad, but not so bad as...
It's not as bad as all the hype that's out there. So, folks, if you're in Vero Beach, Florida, on the Treasure Coast this weekend, stop by the Patisserie Tomorrow for their open house. And if you're anywhere else in the country, go to bbga.org. That's the Bread Bakers Guild of America. And find a bakery near you that's having an open house. And support your local artisan bread baker. You'll be really glad you did. Thank you so much, Mark. You make some awesome bread.
I've had
the pleasure of eating my weight in it. And we'll have you back on the show again soon. You're listening to Chef Michael Glotz on the World Travel and Dining Guide. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back. You're listening to the World Travel and Dining Guide, and I'm your host, Chef Michael Glotz, and I have here in the studio with me Christian Garcia. Welcome, Christian.
Good morning, Chef Michael.
Nice to have you in the studio with me today.
Great to be here.
Christian is the owner and the public face of the Patisserie in Vero Beach, Florida.
And what a face it is, huh?
And what a face it is. A face that only a mother can love. Does she love your face?
Of course she does.
I'm sure she does. And I wanted to bring you in today to talk a little bit about customer service. You know, we're in the hospitality business, whether you're a baker, you're a great restaurant, you work for an airline, you're the front desk in a hotel. We're all in the hospitality industry in some way, shape, or form. And it's almost becoming a lost art in a sense that people are sort of forgetting what it's really all about, because it's about the customer. But that doesn't always mean that it's fun and easy either.
That's true.
And I know what it's like to be out front in a bakery or in a restaurant and deal with the customer. Thankfully, not, how would you say, 95% or more of all the customers with every day are fabulous.
I mean, yeah, almost everyone's great, but you remember the two
absolutely
that made you crazy really all day.
So even with the great people, there's still some challenges, right?
Sure.
Tell me about some of the things you run into on a daily basis.
Well, you know, even with great customers, when you're dealing with them on a daily basis, you know, we have a very high return customer. You know, we have a cafe, so we have, you know, repeat customers. And it just gets hard because with regulars, because you have to kind of give them the attention that they're coming there for. They're kind of, they're coming there for the coffee and the food, but they're also now coming there because they've made a bond with you.
Yeah,
it's almost like we talked before, like being a bartender. You know,
right, you're a bartender of sorts because you have to listen to their stories, good stories, bad stories, birthdays.
You know, it's 7:05 in the morning and I'm still trying to set up the shop, and you know, the first customer comes in and wants to have that,
and they want 20 minutes of chat time with you.
Yeah, they're having their coffee and having a nice leisurely morning, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, so it's hard to like kind of give them the subtle hint, and but you know, it's just, you don't want to be rude and you want to
And I've seen you in action. With you, it's really all about the customer.
Yes.
And you'll even put aside your duties for a moment if it means giving great customer service.
Sure.
That's something that's missing in a lot of places in world travel these days, is that whole idea of the customer coming first. And kudos to you, because you're really awesome at it.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to have that first customer and they're really difficult from the get-go.
Let's have some fun for a moment. What kind of difficulties do you get?
Well, you know,
I'm allergic to black peppercorns.
Well, even better than the allergies is, like, you know, it's, again, the first thing you walk in and you're asking for a bagel, and it's like, oh, God, you know, here we go. It's a French bakery.
Right.
And they can't find anything else that they want except for that bagel, and they kind of walk out, and you have to kind of just...
You have at the bakery dozens and dozens and dozens of fresh baked products, breads, viennoiserie, Danish pastries, a full cafe menu, and people walk out because they can't get a bagel?
Yes, they do.
They will find something
else. I mean, they're just so fixated on what they want. They don't even look at what's, you know, if that was me, I'm sure there's something I could find here that's to my liking.
You know, whether you're in your own community or whether you're traveling to a foreign or different community, take time when you walk into a place, particularly an artisan place like a bakery or a restaurant, some place where there's customer service involved, and kind of feel for what they're all about. That's what I would encourage you to do as listeners. And you might discover something really awesome. How sad the person that walks out of your amazing French patisserie because you don't have bagels, that they didn't discover an amazing croissant.
One of the tricks that I've often would do is, well, I say to someone, well, I can't let anyone leave empty-handed, and I just hand them a cookie or just something.
Sure. Well, that's great customer service. You want them to come back.
And I hand them here's a to-go menu, and if you're ever interested, come back in.
Right, right.
You know, it shouldn't be like, well, all right, they didn't want it, get out. I mean, that's what you want to say, but
sure.
It's hard. And then, you know, then you have the repeat customer, too, where we've discussed this before, where you are part of their everyday lives, and then, you know, they're talking to you about the highs and the lows, and you kind of go through what they're going through, you know.
Sure.
Their kids' births,
You've confided in me that you've had customers that have lost spouses.
Yeah, it's tough. Or someone who's been a regular of yours, and now they've been diagnosed with whatever, and it's just...
You watch them fade away.
They, you know, they're a part of your daily life, and all of a sudden they're not there anymore, and it's just, it's an odd and unexpected thing that happens to you when you think you're there. Okay, I'm here to sell and I'm doing my retail job, but it's much more than that in a community like this, where it's an artisan bakery. We're trying to get that handcrafted, homey feel, and that's part of the territory. You know,
sure. You have to become part of their lives.
Yes, it's
Right.
It's good and it's bad, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, it's not all easy, but it's mm-hmm. it's fun. And you know what? I always take it as a challenge. The easy customers, they're just enjoyable. They're great to have around. I sort of love the difficult ones because they're a challenge. They teach you. They help you to.
They
hone
do.
Your,
you do.
They help you to hone your skills.
You
right?
certainly learn
become
from
better
it.
What you do, yep. right?
And I've noticed that in the way that I deal with some, you know, difficult or challenging customers, that the other employees kind of start to notice, and then I've heard them use some of the ways that you kind of diffuse a situation or whatever. And it's
you were telling me a fun story off air. About how because you want to seem interested and you want to please mm-hmm. that when people come in and say they have their gluten allergy, what do you say to them?
Well, you know, like as you talked before, that there actually is a disease that's celiac
right.
disease.
Yeah. No, I'm getting at what we talked about before. You say, well, where are you on the scale?
Yeah, I'll ask people, where are they on the gluten scale, which doesn't exist.
Right, sure. But you're showing that you're interested and you're concerned about
sure.
their health, and suddenly they're looking at you going, oh, well, my gluten intolerance isn't that bad, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's just kind of a funny thing that, again, the customer really doesn't even know
right.
what they're talking about, but you're going to give them great service. You're trying to seem concerned.
And I want to know that if you do have a serious, like, I want to differentiate those people, the
right.
people with the allergies and the people who are sensitive.
So, or just following the food fad.
Right. And to make sure, you know, that the person with the allergy isn't going to
sure.
oh, you know, you'll be all right.
Sure. What other kind of crazy, bizarre things besides gluten do people see?
I mean, I've heard allergies to so many things. Black pepper, broccoli. I mean, really, just
it's really,
runs
you know,
the gamut.
I've been a chef for over 30 years. And in my mind, it seems like this has only been an issue for less than the last decade. I feel like it's been like the last 5 years where all
yes.
of a sudden the whole world is allergic to everything
right.
and it's become proper and accepted when you walk into a restaurant or someone's home mm-hmm. to announce all of the things you can't have or don't like
right.
or you're allergic to or will make you sick. And it's really kind of interesting. You have to wonder, are all these people really getting that sick with food all of a sudden
mm-hmm.
or are our noses just in magazines and we're reading about the latest trends and
right.
suddenly we realize, you know, black pepper something, and so I don't want to eat black pepper anymore. So all of a sudden you've got an allergy to it. The sad part about it is there really are people that have allergies, that mm-hmm. have issues like celiac,
sure,
who are almost falling into the fog of all the hype
mm-hmm.
that's sort of not real. And so we're not really focusing on our attention on the people that really do have issues. Instead,
right.
we're kind of, you know, because we want to give great service, we're kind of giving into everybody on these things.
Yeah, it's just it's hard because you don't know what to
sure.
believe. You know, you don't want to
sure.
get somebody who actually has an allergy sick or something.
Right.
So.
And at the same time, you want the customer. So you try to really evaluate, right, if they're where they're at. And they come in and announce something like that. I've watched you in action. You sort of.
Well, and for this, regarding the gluten thing, I and it is true. I say, look, if you have a gluten allergy, you shouldn't have anything here because our kitchen has
right.
flour going every minute.
You can't bake a gluten-free product
if it's made in the same kitchen.
Made in the same kitchen.
Cross contamination,
right?
Just like with nuts and all those things.
Sure, sure. There's flour just in the air you're breathing inside a bakery.
Yeah, you shouldn't be
right.
even attempting to come in. I'm sorry.
It's really interesting. All this is so interesting. It's not as easy as just giving great customer service and selling amazing pastries and breads and sandwiches and coffees. But there's this whole political dynamic
mm-hmm.
that you have to deal with as well.
Yeah.
Wow, but you love it.
I do love it. It's, you know, and it's the 98% of the people that are awesome that give you feedback, that just love the stuff, that are really getting it. That's what makes it worth it for sure.
Sure. So listeners, become part of that 98%.
Yes. I'll give you even better service.
Oh, I've seen you. You give great service to everyone.
Oh, thank you.
So if you're in the Vero Beach, Florida area and the Treasure Coast here, stop by and see the patisserie. Christian in the front of the house, Chef Mark in the back. They've got a great open house weekend going on with the Bread Bakers Guild of America.
Yes.
And stop by and visit them, get a tour of the kitchen, meet them, stick your hands in some flour, taste some great bread, and be part of the artisan bread movement. You're listening to Chef Michael Glotz on the World Travel and Dining Guide. back. I'm your host, Chef Michael Glotz, and you're listening to the World Travel and Dining Guide. We've had a lot of fun today. We've had Chef Will Bennett from San Juan, Puerto Rico, Picayo Restaurant. We'd have Chef Mark Edmonds from the Patisserie in Vero Beach talking about the bread-centric weekend with the Bread Bakers Guild of America. We've talked about wine. We've talked about cheese. This is what the show's going to be all about. A little bit earlier in today's show, we talked about some of the tricks of the pro, trying to become a little bit better chef at home, just for your own enjoyment, if for nothing else. But how great if you then start to feel more comfortable and you can expand your repertoire cooking for your family and friends. We talked a lot about working on building your methods and techniques, and also working on building your pantry, your home pantry, having some basic staple ingredients always on hand, so that your food doesn't have to be so planned. You can be cooking. You can actually be sautéing and flipping something and mashing something and stirring something and say, oh, I think I'll add a little sofrito to that, or I think I'm going to take some of that Malabar peppercorn and crush them with the bottom of my sauté pan and throw them in big chunks and give the sauce some zest and some texture and flavor. These are all little things we do as professional chefs to zip up our food a little bit. Let's talk about method and technique a little bit. I mentioned that earlier. And once you master some certain methods and techniques, cooking becomes really so much easier, and it really widens for you. And you're going to see what I mean in a moment. Here's a perfect example. I do what I call my 30-minute chicken. Now, it's really not 30-minute chicken, so don't start cooking it 30 minutes before you want to eat, because it's really 90-minute chicken. The reason I call it 30-minute chicken is because there's three steps, and each step is 30 minutes, okay? So if you just remember 30-minute chicken, you're not going to mess it up, all right? But keep in mind, it takes really 90 minutes to do. This is for an average-size supermarket chicken, 3 to 4 pounds, right? Sometimes I like to buy the really large leg and thigh quarters. This will also work for those if you want more individual servings, or to work for a whole bird. Either way, here's where the 30 minutes comes into, okay? Take the pan or whatever you're going to cook the chicken in and put it in your cold oven. Turn the oven on to 450. Set your timer for 30 minutes. Okay? In 30 minutes, your oven is at 450, nice and hot. Your pan, your empty pan is preheated, nice and hot. You're going to take your well-seasoned bird, okay, backbone side down, all right, and you're going to put it in your pan. It's immediately going to sizzle. You're going to close the oven door. You're going to set your timer for 30 minutes. You're going to roast that bird or those quarters for 30 minutes. Don't open the door. Leave the door closed. Resist the urge to take it and take a peek and see how it's doing. Trust me, it's doing fine. It's very happy in there. And in about 15 minutes, you're going to smell it, and you're going to know it's happy in there, and you're going to be happy because your kitchen's going to start to smell great. All right? So 30 minutes comes up. The cooking time is over. You're going to reset your timer for another 30 minutes. You're going to shut the oven off, and you're going to let the bird slowly relax in the oven for the final 30 minutes. So you've got 30 minutes of oven preheat time with your empty pan. Then you've got 30 minutes of hard cooking at 450 degrees. Then you've got 30 minutes of the bird resting in the hot oven, kind of slowly coming down in temperature, letting the juices sort of neutralize in the bird, right? When that timer goes off, you've got a perfectly roasted bird every time. Trust me, the skin is unbelievably crispy. And if you've seasoned it, it's really delicious too. The inside of the bird, really moist and juicy. It works every time. If your bird is a little bit larger than 3-4 pounds, you're bordering more on the 5 to 6 pounds, maybe your 30 minutes has to become 40 minutes. But again, this is how, as a chef, you sort of get this down. Go to the supermarket, buy yourself a 3 to 4 pound bird, try this out. Once you do it a couple times, you master it. Now you can start playing with it, because guess what? You've got the method and you've got the technique down. Okay, now here's where you have fun, right? Put that bird in the oven, cover it with salt and pepper always. Salt and pepper on the outside of the bird. Don't forget to season the inside of the cavity too. That sort of steams and provides a lot of flavor, right? You want to season the inside of the cavity as well with anything you put on the outside. Salt, pepper, fresh rosemary, right? While that bird's in the oven doing its thing for 30 minutes and 30 minutes, you're making a great pot of mashed potatoes, right? I'm talking about, don't waste your time peeling the potatoes. Buy good quality potatoes. If you're lucky enough to live near a farm, you get farm potatoes, local potatoes, even that much better. Yellow potatoes, Yukon potatoes, gold potatoes, purple potatoes, really doesn't matter. Don't bother peeling them. Just wash them really well. Throw them in a pot. Put a little salt in there to taste. Come on, Chef Michael, what's salt to taste? Salt to taste is salt the water you're going to cook your potatoes in and taste it. What should it taste like? It should taste like salt water. It should taste like you're in the ocean and you just stuck your finger in your mouth. That's what it should taste like. Not quite enough, add a little bit more. It's important to salt things like potatoes at the beginning of the cooking process. It's going to really bring out the natural flavor of the potato. So while your chicken's in there for 30 minutes and 30 minutes, you've got these awesome potatoes. You bring them to a boil. You cook them till they're fork tender. You drain off the extra water, right? Now what are you going to do? Have fun, right? Take them. Just mash them with a fork or use a whip. You don't even need a potato masher. Don't worry about making them smooth. Leave them chunky. The skins are on there. They're rustic. They're fun. It's less work for you, right? Season up a little salt, pepper. I open the refrigerator door. Oh, look, I got a little creme fraiche here. A couple tablespoons of creme fraiche left from dinner the other night. I toss them into the potatoes. I've got a little Vermont culture butter here left on the butter plate from bread the other night. Boom, into the potatoes. Maybe a couple drops of heavy cream, a little sour cream. All these things that you might have. Maybe you've got, we talked about making a little blue cheese dressing earlier with that Rogue Creamery Echo Mountain Blue. Crumble all that blue cheese in there. Mix it all around. Leave it kind of chunky and rustic. Now your second timer's gone off. Your chicken is ready. You've got perfectly roasted chicken covered in rosemary. You've got these great, really flavorful mashed potatoes. It's that easy. Tomorrow night, you can do the same thing. Just switch it up. You got a totally different dinner, right? Take that same chicken and cover it with sofrito. Sofrito is this wonderful Puerto Rican sort of pesto that I'll teach you how to make on a future show. I'll put it on my website for you, give you a quick instruction. Rub the inside and the outside of that bird with pesto. You're going to make a very Latin-style roasted chicken. While your chicken is doing its 30 minutes, 30 minutes, you're making a great pot of rice. Oh, Chef Mike, every time I make rice, I screw it up. It's either too hard or it's not cooked enough. Again, it's another method and technique to use, right? Basic rice cooking. 1.5 times the water that you use for rice. So if you've got 2 cups of rice, you need 3 cups of water. I take my pot, I put it on, take a pot where you've got a lid that fits on that's nice and tight. Because the secret to cooking rice is letting it steam itself, right? I take the pot, I put it on the burner, I turn the burner on high, put a little olive oil in there, a little clarified butter. Use good quality olive oil or good quality butter because this is going to help flavor the rice. Okay, while the pot is heating with a little bit of oil or butter in there, put your rice in there. Put your measured rice in there and about a tablespoon of salt to 2 cups of rice. Stir it around. The pot's getting hot. You'll start to smell the rice. It'll start to have this wonderful sort of nutty smell. The rice and the salt, I'm sorry, the oil and the salt or the butter is all coating each grain of rice. It's really smelling nutty and wonderful. Pour in your 3 cups of water. Better yet, pour in 3 cups of chicken stock that you made and you had in your pantry for just this very occasion. You're going to add a lot more flavor to the rice. Bring the whole thing to a boil. Let it simmer without a cover. Let it simmer until the bubbles are just on the surface of the rice. Put a lid on it. Turn it to the lowest setting on your oven. Set your timer for 20 minutes. Perfect rice every time. Now you've got rice, you've got chicken, a totally different meal. Have fun with that rice. Maybe throw a little bit of garlic and onions in when you're sautéing the rice with the olive oil. Throw in some saffron or turmeric if you like that really nice sort of Spanish yellow rice, right? Throw in some multicolored peppers and maybe some fresh cut corn off the cob for a little bit more of a Mexican twist. Now you know how to roast a perfect bird. You know how to make great rice. You know how to have fun with some mashed potatoes, right? What a great meal you have. You're building your methods and techniques. Every time you do these things and practice, you're building your repertoire of what you know how to do. That in conjunction with your pantry, having some great wines that you now know how to serve at proper temperature, right? Because we talked about that earlier in the show, right? You've got some great cheeses like the Echo Mountain Blue. You're going to reach out and start building your palate and searching out some more of these artisan things, right? You're going to stop at a local artisan bakery in your community and buy some really crusty, well-made artisan bread. And you remember Chef Mark said, water, flour, salt, yeast, a little bit of malt. That's it. That's all that needs to be in bread. You're going to put all this together. You're going to invite your friends over for dinner, and they're going to say, wow, did you go to culinary school or something? And you're going to say, nope, I'm just listening to the World Travel and Dining Guide with Chef Michael Glotz. Well, I've had a lot of fun with you here today. It's great to be part of this new exciting media family here on the World Travel and Dining Guide. Thanks for listening to my premiere show. We'll be back each week with more fun, more delicious things to talk about, and hopefully lots of laughs. I'd love to hear from you. My email is chefmichael@foodspacemedia.com. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week.